You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. Great to be with you today. It is, again, a sunny and warm day in Western New York. It is the day two of the nice weather we get. We get about 8 days a year where I live of really great weather. This is two of the eight, so I do have to keep track of that. But it's a fantastic day. I hope it's great where you are today listening to the show. A couple of quick announcements. Of course, I want to thank our show sponsor, Virgin Pulse, of course, sponsoring the show since 1981. So happy for their support over the years, and you can learn more about what they're doing at www.virginpulse.com. A couple of quick updates on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We just recorded a really fun show. Trish and I did all about the Internet Trends Report. We broke that down a little bit and what the HR kind of implications were of some of the trends that were reported by Mary Meeker and company last week, and that was a fun show. I hope you caught that one, as well as some shows we did at Cornerstone On Demand, and we did one with Veteran Hiring recently, and just lots of great stuff in the archive, so please check those out. And plenty of other shows on the network coming all the time, so keep it locked into the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. If you have an idea for a guest, a topic, anything you want us to talk about, you can tweet at us at HR Happy Hour, or just send me an email, steve@h3hr.com. Finally, we are super excited about our HR Happy Hour version of the show on Alexa, on your Amazon Alexa. Just search for the HR Happy Hour skill on your Alexa app and add the HR Happy Hour show to your daily flash briefing. All right, enough with the announcements. I want to get on with the topic. We're going to talk about hiring and why is this still so screwed up? And a topic we're going to be talking about at the upcoming HR Technology Conference again. And our guest today is also going to be helping us break that down at HR Tech this year, which I'm excited about. But let me introduce her. Our guest today is Frida Polly. Frida is an award-winning Harvard and MI-trained neuroscientist. Oddly enough, Frida, so am I. That's weird. But she is a neuroscientist turned CEO.
I thought you looked familiar from somewhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of us go around. All right, that's my fault for interrupting your bio. I need to keep reading. She's an award-winning neuroscientist turned CEO and a thought leader on the future of neuroscience, AI, and hiring. She is the CEO and co-founder of Pymetrics, a company using neuroscience and AI to help global clients, including Unilever and Accenture, match candidates with their ideal jobs while removing bias from the hiring process. Frida was a pre-doctoral fellow at Harvard Medical School and a post-doctoral fellow at MIT. She was also a life science fellow at Harvard Business School, where she received her MBA. She has been featured on CNN, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, and lots of other outlets. Frida, please welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Hey, it's great to have you. That right up there in my top five impressive bios. And when I read bios like that, Frida, especially when I get to the
kind
of
overeducated, really.
No,
I should be embarrassed.
No. But so. I always make people feel bad at this point. You know, when people like give me the CNN, Wall Street Journal list, and all that list, I always say, hey, after this show, I hope to see and the HR Happy Hour on that list of clips that we reference in the bio.
Absolutely. Frida, are you kidding me? I'm excited.
Oh, this is a huge. It's hard. It's a hard get. Believe me, I'm gonna tell you what. I'm gonna pat myself on the back, Frida. Our show is up like 200% year over year in listens, and I'm gonna tell you, I get pitched five guests every single day. So it's great to have you on the show. So, Frida, hiring. What got you into this notion from neuroscience and all the great stuff you did educationally and your PhD and everything? What made you start thinking about, hey, let's fix the hiring process?
Why in the world did I go down this
path? Of everything else,
what
sent you down this path?
Yep, absolutely. So look, there are a couple of different things that sent me down this path. The most obvious one was that while I really liked the research I was doing as a cognitive neuroscientist, I really was frustrated by the lack of real-world applications. So that's how I ended up going to the business school at Harvard, to get an MBA is because I was like, I need to figure out something to do with the technology that is more practical than just writing research papers. So going to HBS and actually seeing recruiting firsthand for 2 years, because that's what MBA students do, is actually what sparked my interest. It was sort of like being faced with a problem, and I was like, wow, this is like really messed up that we're still doing recruiting in 2012 in the same way that we were when I was, you know, graduating from college, and that was a while ago. And so that was really what sparked my interest mm-hmm. in trying to fix the problem. And I couldn't help thinking to myself, like, you know, in the day and age of better science, technology platforms, machine learning, recommendation, personalization, why is everyone still dropping, you know, a sort of, you know, very antiquated resume into the resume black hole and expecting that, you know, the outcome is going to be different? So that was point number one. Point number two is I was experiencing the pain myself, which is that I loved my job, but all of a sudden I found myself wanting to do something different. And here I show up at an MBA program with like literally my CV, my resume was like 50 pages, because that's how long academic CVs
sure,
are.
Yeah.
And it told me nothing, and I truly mean nothing about what I should be doing in the real world. And I was like, and I wasn't alone. There were all these people graduating from the military, you know, leaving the military and all these other professions where they were like, this is not what I've done in the past 5, 10, whatever years doesn't tell me anything about what I should be doing in the future. So that was, you know, point number two. And then, you know, really at the end of the day, like, I became a cognitive neuroscientist because I think people are fascinating. I just think they're fascinating. And I think, you know, as a cognitive neuroscientist, a lot of times you're sort of doing, sort of studying maybe more and more esoteric problems and not taking the broad view of like, what can we learn about people? What makes people so interesting? What's a big problem in understanding people that we haven't solved yet? And, you know, I think this whole area of how to best match people to their perfect vocation is such a huge, huge, you know, important area in life.
Sure.
I mean, other than finding, you know, your family and your soulmate, like, what else is more important than finding a career that you find fulfilling? So that those three things were really what got me into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great story, and it's a little bit different than some of the other stories I hear from founders, but similar enough as well. It's like you kind of discovered a problem, you dealt with it yourself, you figured, hey, you know, if I'm having this problem, you know, everyone's probably having this problem too, and this is really messed up, right? And
completely. And also, I think the other thing, Steve, is like, this is happening at Harvard, which, you know, serves a very overserved population, as we like to say, right?
Right.
There's not a lack of resources. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, if this is happening here in the most overserved population, imagine people that don't have the same resources as Harvard MBA students, which is the vast majority of the population, and how much worse it must be for them. So it really felt like, you know, this was just a giant problem that everyone must be facing.
Yeah, and I felt like, you know, too, there was so much of, maybe still is, so much of, you know, everybody read the same book or two or the same tips about
yep.
how to find the best candidates, and that way every interview you
Completely.
Ever went to, you had to sit down with the tell me about a time
yep.
when you know stories
yeah.
you had to have, and you had to be armed yep. with five of them, right, in going in.
Exactly.
And, yeah. So all right. So that
yep.
makes a lot. That makes a ton of sense, and we'll get into that in a little bit more detail. So hey, I'll throw this out
yep.
there. It's kind of a bigger question, and again, a couple of years ago, I started thinking about this a lot in the context of what we were trying to do at HR Technology, and I'm still thinking about it, but like, and I'll just ask the question this way, like, why do you think, or what are some of the key reasons why after, I mean, decades of research, hundreds of millions of dollars thrown at technology around this
yeah.
hiring process, and tons of
yep.
attention paid to it. It's not for a lack of effort, right? Why do you think
yeah.
are the key reasons why hiring remains kind of, you know, quote unquote broken for many
yeah.
companies and for candidates?
Sure.
What are the
yeah.
what are the common things you find?
So sure. And again, obviously I'm going to caveat this with, this is my opinion and, you know,
sure.
you're getting it for free. So you know what they say about free opinions, but that having been said, I think there's a couple reasons. I mean, first of all, behavioral science, which is really what, you know, hiring is, it's trying to understand people and their fit to something, is really hard. You know, people are talk about hard problems. They talk about cybersecurity and launching rockets in space, and that's all true. But actually trying to predict stuff in human beings is one of the hardest problems you could possibly ever do. So I think that's point number one. And mm-hmm. I think that really defines the problem space that we're talking about, is that it's a challenging one, right? Then I think the second thing is that we have, just like many other things in life, you know, evolved our understanding from a scientific perspective of how we better understand humans. We've adopted all sorts of new technology in the form of data science, big data, machine learning. I think those have only come online in the last 5 to 10 years, I'm going to say. So I don't think we've really had the type of tools necessary to date to fundamentally fix this problem. So I'm extremely hopeful that we're going to make some really big strides. And I think, you know, Pymetrics is, you know, part of that solution. I think there will be other parts as well. So I'm extremely hopeful that, you know, new understandings and how to assess people and, you know, big data approaches to this can be really transformative in this area. And then the third thing I would say, and this is, you know, going to sound however it sounds, right now, even though there's huge cost and pain associated with, you know, hiring failures, both on the company side, but I would say even more on the job applicant side, in the sense that if you don't work out in a job, I think it's actually a lot harder as a person than it is for, you know, as a company. No one on the company side is really held accountable to that. What I mean by that is the recruiter who hired that person, nobody comes, you know, to talk to him or her and say, hey, you know, Brian didn't work out and, you know, that's on you. So at the end of the day, it's sort of assumed that this process is going to have a high failure rate. And no one at the end of the day is either from a sort of like a, this process from a process or budget standpoint, I think really accountable for the fact that it doesn't work out. I mean, if you look at the stats that were published by SHRM, it's like, you know, 250 people apply for every for any open job, yet the first year failure rates are 30 to 50%. I mean, that's staggering failure if you think you have 250 options to choose from and routinely that person, the option you choose, it doesn't work out half, you know, half the time. It's just because there, it's an incentive problem as well. Like if I as a recruiter knew that my job was on the line if those numbers didn't improve, I think that there would be more incentive to really dig in. And I don't mean to put recruiters on the spot. I just
Sure.
mean no one is really incentivized to fix this problem. And you know, I think, you know, to not blame recruiters at all, they're understaffed, they don't have enough budget. You know, they're not given the credibility and the authority to really do, you know, they're not the whole seat at the table thing. I think only now is really being given to recruiters. So I think it's those three factors, you know, sort of this, you know, lack of viewing this function as a truly strategic function, the problem being extremely hard to solve for in the first place, and then the fact that new tools have really only come online. I think it's these three things that I think still, you know, put us in the place we are today. However, I'm extremely hopeful for the future. So,
yeah, Frida, thanks for laying
and
that
the
out.
I mean, I think the future is present, actually. So,
yeah,
you're welcome.
And I think
I'm going to answer all your questions now with 3 points.
Yeah,
you know,
I love that. I love the
nonsense.
Structure. And there's something about
I'm
that.
I'm joking. I don't know that I can do that.
I like that. No, it's good. It's good. It's a good
thanks.
Takeaway. So I think I agree with just about everything you said. And I also think, right, that bit about you mentioned the failure rate, right? If we're saying 30-50%
yep.
failure rate, I don't want to say we learn to accept failure, but maybe we don't accept it, but we sort of come to expect it. And so any individual breakdown in the process, any individual, you know, hire that doesn't really match or doesn't fit, certainly bad for the organization, much more devastating to that person though, right? Who may have made
for sure
huge
absolutely.
Life decisions around taking that job in the first place. Right. And so,
absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, so...
And that was actually, you know, Stephen, that was actually one of the things that prompted me to get into this, is because, you know, companies come on campus and sure, they spend a lot of money and, you know, maybe it doesn't work out and like, okay, so they're going to, you know, it's not as efficient a process as it could be. But what really drove me was the human side of it, which was, and again, this is HBS where, you know, people are overserved, so there weren't any tragedies, but it was sort of just seeing people really, you know, thinking, oh my goodness, like I'm the perfect fit for investment banking, even though everyone was telling them, you like to go to bed at 9. I don't think that's really a good job for you, right? But
right.
they were like convinced that no, this is my perfect job, and then getting the job and then hating it and then having to start that process all over again. And look, nobody's going to feel sorry for Harvard students, and no one should. But the point is, that's the same everywhere. Like, how many stories have you heard about like somebody that was convinced they wanted to be a dentist or a lawyer or whatever, and then after, you know, 3 years of school or whatever, they get to be in that function and they're not happy. So I think the human cost of being unhappy in your job and not feeling and feeling like you spent a lot of time and effort and feeling trapped and not feeling like you have options is a terrible feeling. And so trying to solve that human piece of the equation, I think, is critical as well.
Yeah, and even for the cold...
Probably the most critical piece, I think.
Yeah, and I think I'd agree. And even for the cold-hearted folks out there who might say, who cares about that? Who cares if you're unhappy at work?
They are really cold-hearted.
In addition to the individual cost and the societal cost, you could argue, there's also a huge organizational cost as well. And we don't need to get into a deep dive into the data that shows how much better people perform when they're better aligned in the role and they're happy in the role. And we know all those data. It's all there. They'll be more engaged. They'll work a little bit harder. They'll be more productive. They won't be absent as much. They tend not to get sick as much. All those things that we want. So it seems like there's so much benefit, right, for sort of making those connections and making those matches, right, at least initially, that we got to think about this more and more. And so let's talk about that a little bit.
For sure.
From your point of view, so, you know, let's talk about that first initial part, right? Is this person going to be a good match for the job? And traditionally, right, and even technology-based, the technologies, as you said, prior to, say, 5 to 10 years ago, they were only really good at doing things like, I don't know, looking for experience highlights, keywords, things like that, a progression of responsibility in a certain manner that might fit a role. And that's good to a point, but that obviously hasn't worked very well over the long term. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how you guys are approaching that first part is, how do we think this candidate might fit for a given role?
So I guess there are several things that we do differently. So one is that instead of using more traditional tools, which by the way were fantastic for the time they were developed, but now maybe have some issues that have become obvious about them. So instead of using a personality test or a cognitive test that is sort of like more like a scholastic test or an IQ test, we look at people's personality and cognitive traits using a set of exercises that have been developed by a global community, really, to look at things like memory, attention, planning, sequencing, and so on the cognitive side, and then on the risk side, things like your reward profile, your risk profile, your altruism profile, and so on. So we use a different way of tapping into those traits. We call them traits. And the reason this behavioral exercise way is better is because behavior doesn't lie. It's kind of like a scale, right? Like, if I asked you, Steve, like, you know, how much do you weigh? Like, you might not know how much you weigh. You might have, you know, changed your weight since the last time you stepped on a scale. You might not want to tell me. I mean, there's a whole host of reasons that data you're giving me might not be accurate, which is true of a questionnaire. But if I just put you on a scale, again, the scale doesn't lie, right? Like, maybe you're a little, maybe you're retaining all water that day, but generally speaking, it's going to be accurate, right?
Sure.
So that's why measuring someone's behavior is preferable. So that's one of the primary things that we do differently is look at cognitive and emotional traits using behavior. And then the second thing we do, which I think is another really unique piece and a huge improvement, is we don't assume a one size fits all. So historically, if you think about like pre-hire assessments, still to date, there's a lot of vendors out there that basically say, oh, you know, Steve, you're looking to hire some salespeople. Well, we've done all this research and we've figured out competency mapping and we know it's this and we've looked at ONED and okay, this is what you want in a salesperson, right? Well, I mean, to me, in this day and age of personalized machine learning, I think that's very antiquated in the sense that if I told you, Steve, you know, you're a man who lives in upstate New York and these are the movies that men that live in upstate New York like, imagine if Netflix recommended movies based on that system, which is what's happening in the hiring world. Like, you might hate those movies, right? Who says you're the generic guy? Who says that a generic guy even exists? So I think we need to learn from Amazon and Netflix and all these places which have taken data from the actual place where they're trying to do the matching and use that data to build a very personalized system. And that's how we do our system as well. Okay. So instead of assuming that everyone in a sales role has the same traits, no matter what company or whatnot, we actually go in, we have the high performing salespeople go through the same exact platform that we would have a candidate go through. And then we analyze their data to understand what are the traits that are driving high performance in that group of salespeople at that company. And so again, it's just a much more personalized system that we knew from an early day. So our early testing ground was HVS students and the companies that recruit there. And we knew that building those custom algorithms for companies worked better than generic ones. So we just kind of have extrapolated that and made it really, really easy to build a custom solution. And again, these custom solutions have always existed, but the fact of technology has now made them scalable, right? A custom solution used to require I like to say, you know, lots of people in with PhDs and lab coats coming in with clipboards, which because back in the day, that's how you did it. But now I think these customized solutions can be a lot more scalable. So I think it is the advances in technology that are, I think, leading us to better solutions.
Yeah, Frida, a couple things here. Let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. We're talking with Frida Polly from Pymetrics, talking about hiring and how do we finally attempt to try to fix it or at least improve it, right? After many, many years of throwing solutions at it and spending money on it and doing a lot of the same things over and over again and hoping for a better outcome. You know, one of the, Frida, when you were talking about the process a little bit and how, specifically when you mentioned how like a high performing salesperson at company X may not have that same profile as a high performing salesperson at company, say, Y. And there are a lot of reasons why that's the truth. And made me think of, I just jotted down a note when you're talking about this idea is how much of this idea, and you can tell me wrong, right? Again, it's your opinion. You can tell me if you agree or disagree with it. But a thing that gets kicked around all the time, like an old chestnut in the hiring game is, is hire for attitude or hire for fit and then train for skill later. And that's what I was thinking about when you were discussing the differences in these two fictional companies. I'd love for you to comment on that notion and how much of that you agree with or not, and, and if so, like how does that influence what you guys are doing at Pymetrics?
Well, so I actually believe wholeheartedly in the fit. That's really what I'm describing is that we've gone, you know, again, if you look at an O-net, that basically assumes that job X, whether it's, you know, a salesperson, financial advisor, whatever it is, has a certain sort of static set of competencies that they must be good at, and that that's the most critical piece. But I actually think that, and again, we knew this from a data-driven way from having worked with sort of early test sets at HBS, that, you know, roles are different in different places, and the culture of an organization can also be different. So both of those are going to contribute to a situation where fit is the critical element that you want to try to look at. And I would take it a step further and say that, you know, these more you know, legacy technologies take this approach. And I think it's just, you know, it's kind of an approach that really was kind of sort of widely accepted, you know, let's say up until a little while ago, that there's a certain type of employee that will do well everywhere. You know, they've got the leadership profile and they have, you know, they're conscientious and all this stuff. And then there's another type of profile that's just going to suck everywhere. Right. And I just fundamentally cannot believe that's true because, you know, I've seen this myself. Like, I have been a fantastic employee when the role has been the right one and I've really enjoyed myself. I have been the worst employee on the planet if that is if those two things don't happen. And I'm that same person. So I just fundamentally do not believe that there's such a thing as an absolute good employee. So I think it's not just about debunking this idea that there is such a thing as a good employee, which by the way, is still strikingly commonly held belief. But even more than that, it's saying that the same role in different companies could actually be different. So we totally believe in a fit-based approach. And if a company is using our assessment and somebody is looking to hire for one company and they apply and they don't match, they could actually be a good fit for marketing at another company. So I think it's a much more optimistic and realistic picture to a candidate where just because you're not a fit somewhere in a particular role doesn't mean you have to just give up on that. It doesn't mean you're not a good fit anywhere. It's just about, finding that fit.
Yeah. And I've been one of those guys out there for a long time now bashing this idea of the hiring for fit thing, the hiring, you know, because
I did not realize that.
Well, no, but no, here's the reason why, because the way we determined it was just a guy sitting across the table from the candidate and just making that decision. Oh, you fit, you don't fit. Right? It was so subjective. You went to the, you go to the same country club
of
as
course.
I do. You
yeah,
went to the same
course.
College
yep.
as I do. I'd like to have a beer
oh,
with
yeah,
you after work.
Sure.
That was the proxy for hiring. For
no,
fit,
that's hiring for homogeneity. You know what I mean? That's not even fit. I mean, just because you went to the same college or whatever, that just means like, who knows what that means? That doesn't mean anything. It's just hire, like, I just coined this term, but that's hiring for homogeneity.
I
that's
like
definitely
it.
Not at all what we do. In fact, we get asked that a lot. You're like, oh, you use machine learning. You're going to create little cookie cutter robots running around. I'm like, well, first of all, the thing I always say is like, well, what are you doing now? Because you are hiring for homogeneity. But secondly, that's not what we do, right? Like, we have a set of traits that we measure using our platform. And then what we do is we go in, we profile the high performers. And usually when you look at high performers in a particular role, there are really only 5 to 10 traits that are contributing most of the signal. And then everything else we're measuring is not contributing. So all of those are left to vary. So actually what our system does a lot of times is pick people that are so kind of unusual in terms of what the company is expecting that we get the opposite reaction of like, really, this person could be a good fit. We're like, yep, they really could be. You should try it. You know, so I think the fit thing done in a data-driven way actually will lead to much greater, you know, diversity on a whole variety of levels.
Yeah, and that now I can buy in, Frida. Like I said, in the past,
great.
I just never bought in because it was just a made-up thing. It was a made-up, well, we're just going to rule you out,
completely.
And I don't really know the reason why, so
for
I'm
sure.
going to say you don't
yeah.
fit, right?
It fit. No, that's a terrible, terrible way. That's like stereotyping really is what it is, and yeah.
And it's lazy too, and it's also just
it is.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, like I don't know. Again, I hate to like place blame because I think, but look, I think at the end of the day, humans always, many humans, not all, but many humans strive to do their best. So I think what we're talking about is people trying to do their best with limited understanding. We're much more sophisticated now than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So all of these things you and I are talking about are just advances in the way we think about people. So I don't think, I guess lazy is not, it could be the way to describe it, but I think people are just advanced, we're advancing in our understanding of how to select people.
All right, that's fair enough. And for the record, I'm the one who said lazy, not Frida. So let's just be very clear.
No,
about that.
I know.
Yeah. Frida, couple things real quick before we have to let you go. You mentioned machine learning a couple seconds ago, and you guys are applying machine learning AI technologies into this process to help scale it, to help make it smarter and better and faster and more accessible to organizations.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that comes up a lot when we start to talk about AI technologies and advanced technologies, particularly in the hiring process, is, and I'll just state it as a question, how can we be confident and or sure, at least confident anyway, that some of the failings and particularly the biases that lots of organizations had unconsciously introduced to their hiring processes aren't getting baked into the algorithms and the AI that we're trying to apply essentially by virtue of let's look at the good performers and see what they're like and figure out who will be the next good performer. I know you're working hard on this and doing a lot of this. I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think that's a great question. And I think it's a question that luckily I think we hear being asked more and more. So, you know, again, 2 or 3 years ago, but even now, people were like, oh, it's an algorithm that's doing it. It's removing unconscious bias in humans. Great. It's bias-free. And people still use that sort of misleading marketing around their technology, which is like, we're removing human decision-making, therefore it's unbiased. You're like, no, actually, that's totally not true, right? Because to your point, if you're training your models on a bunch of high performers and those performers are not very diverse, you're actually going to bake that in.
Right.
It's basically, if you're training on human, unbiased human decisions, you're actually just perpetuating that bias. And you're making it easy to scale because an algorithm is easy to scale. So what we've seen in recent years is really an interest and a determined effort to do what's called explainable AI. So basically AI that you can actually trace the decision-making pattern, which we do at Pymetrics. And the second thing is that people are being encouraged to audit their algorithms. There's a woman named Kathy O'Neill wrote a book called Weapons of Mass Destruction.
Okay.
And sort of propagated this idea that we need to audit algorithms. And so we actually, before we read Kathy's book, actually had developed a tool to do just that. And so we, at Pymetrics, anytime we develop a new algorithm, we want to make sure that it's unbiased. So what we do is we have a reference group of, you know, people of all different genders, well, mostly two genders, and then all different ethnicities, where we can then assign scores on this new algorithm and say, okay, are the men and women having a statistical difference between scores? Are people of different ethnic backgrounds getting a statistical difference between their scores? If the answer is no, the algorithm is determined to be bias-free. If the answer is yes, there actually is a difference, we then go back and we essentially deweight or remove the feature or features that are causing that and then rebuild the algorithm. And we actually open source the entire process that we use to do this because we think it's such an important piece of what people hopefully should be doing and will be doing more of in the future. But we just wanted to provide an example that people can, you know, follow, that people can question, that people can improve upon, and so on and so forth. So we're really proud of it. We called it Audit AI because it sounded catchy. And I think hopefully we'll see more and more of that because I think it's just a critical piece that will allow for algorithms to really improve diversity, which is what we've seen, and really improve fairness and access to jobs rather than the opposite, which is basically make the world an increasingly unequal place.
Yeah, and Frida, that's so really cool that you're doing that. I read about that prior to us getting together to talk about
Thanks.
The show. So we'll make sure we note that and link out to that in the show
Yeah.
notes as well, you know, to what you've done with the Audit AI and the open source code and everything else. And I think
Yep.
it's an important conversation to have. I've had it increasingly
For
more and
sure.
more when I talk to companies who are getting into the space or in the space. And I
That's
even
great.
read
Yeah, and we're not the only ones. Like, we got cited recently in a piece. Accenture was doing the same thing. I think Microsoft. I mean, there's a growing number of large
Yeah.
companies and probably small companies too, like ourselves, that are really devoting time and resources to doing this. And I think it's critical. And look, it's not easy. It's complicated. There's no perfect solution. But I think the intent of doing this is really what matters.
Yeah,
So.
and I agree with you that it's super complicated. Like, I just even remember reading a study, or kind of tried to read a study. It was really a little bit over my head, but about how
Yeah.
even when certain algorithms, the case study they were using was algorithms that were being applied to decide whether or not, I think it was probably credit scores or something like that, right? To
Yeah, yeah.
loan risk and things
Yep.
like that. And
Yep.
when the designers of the tool and the engineers had removed things like race and
Yep.
ethnicity, they removed
Yep.
those from the data set, that the algorithms kind of figured it out anyway. Like,
Yeah,
they ended up
totally.
still producing
Absolutely.
biased outcomes because they were so
Yes.
powerful that they picked up other
Yes.
signals that were proxies for those
Yeah.
signals and things like that.
Absolutely. And
Yeah.
absolutely. And I think that's why, like, I think our whole premise, there are a couple of ways in which we really try to avoid that happening. So one is the fact that we really, when we designed our platform, it was designed to collect cognitive and emotional traits that are generally thought to be free of bias, meaning that they don't differ that much between different genders and different ethnicities. So that was really important to us, is the actual data needs to be or as bias-free as possible. And then the second thing, to your point, is you can't assume. You have to test, right? You
Yeah,
can't
that's
assume,
it.
oh, I removed blah, 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 and oh, now my algorithm's unbiased. Like, no, to your point, like, I mean, this is what I say. I harp on the resume, maybe too much. Just bear with me for a second. Like, the problem with the resume is it's hard to unbiased, right? Because men don't play, you know, women don't play football and men aren't ballerinas. So, you know, you talk about activities, that's going to give you a good sense of, like, the gender of the person. The types of clubs people belong to, that's, you know, so that's the same idea of, like, oh, well, I blinded in a CV, I don't have their name. Okay,
Right.
but you can, there's a lot of telltale signs. And so I think that's why it's really important to, whatever data set you're using, you actually test the outcome instead of assuming that it's not going to be biased. So
Yeah. This is a super
thanks for bringing
interesting.
up that important point.
Yeah, no, it's a really important point. And it's a really, really interesting point for folks who are HR folks who are listening to this, who are starting to get
Yep.
involved with these kinds of tools and technologies, no matter who the provider is. These are the
Yep.
questions you need to bring up in the conversation, and at least have an
Yep.
understanding about what's happening and what they're doing or not doing, right,
Yep.
to protect against these things. Hey, Frida, we just got a
Yeah,
couple
and I
more
think
minutes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was just gonna say, I think that one of the challenges is that I think sometimes I think people in the field maybe feel like intimidated, like, oh, I didn't, you know, I'm not a math person, I don't
Right.
get it. Like, I think people, it's a common sense thing. Like, I think people in the field should feel like empowered to ask hard questions of the vendors rather than feeling like, oh, you know, this vendor, like, they have a bunch of fancy PhDs and I can't ask them, because, like, you know, no, empower yourself, like, ask them some probing questions, right? Because at the end of the day, I think it is actually, once you start scratching the surface, you know, you really can get a sense of what's going on, even if you're not a mathematician. So
Yeah.
I think don't be afraid, don't feel, you know, sort of like, oh, you know, just intimidated by fancy degrees. Definitely, you know, ask the hard questions.
Yeah, and you've got to be able to, right? Because once you introduce these kinds of tools and technologies into a process
For sure.
as important as hiring, as one that's so kind of personally
Completely.
and human,
Completely.
affects
Yes.
humans so much, you've got to be able to explain them, right? You
Yep.
talk about
Yep.
explainable AI earlier. I think
Completely.
that's a great term
Yep.
because,
Yep.
you know, hey, we're talking about people's lives here, right? Hiring decisions are so
Absolutely. Yep.
important. And all right, I don't have to, everybody
Yep.
agrees with that. So, hey, for your last thing, right before we let you go, just
Sure.
maybe
Yep.
like we're talking a lot about process and technology and taking new approaches to sort of finding the right candidates and matching and finding the right fit for people. Just, it's a little bit abstract, a little bit, but maybe you could drive it into maybe some more specifics. Maybe just tell us if you can and be as specific as you're able to or not. What companies who are taking adopting these kinds of tools, what are they finding, and what are the results been?
They've really been kind of improved across the board, right? So we work with, as you said, companies like Unilever, Accenture. You know, they've seen not only improvements in recruiting, but also in retention and performance. So just very briefly, you know, higher yield can improve by 100% or more. You know, obviously there are costs and time savings, but I think at the end of the day, people are really most excited about the improvements in higher yield because to them that means I'm finding the best candidates for me at a much higher rate. So I think that's important. Diversity gains we see routinely, not just in gender and ethnicity, but also in socioeconomic background, which I think is a really critical under-mentioned type of diversity. And then on the back end, you know, we see improvements in retention, so retention gains of 30, you know, between 30 and 60%, and then performance improvements as well in kind of the similar range. So again, you know, even though I started out saying the problem space of hiring is challenging, which I will stand by that any day of the week, I think that the more we can apply objectivity and better science and unbiased approaches to this, truly unbiased approaches, the better all of these outcomes will continue to get.
Frida, that's a great way to sum it up. And I love what you guys are doing.
Thanks.
It's super interesting. I remember a couple of years ago when I first met you and I first got acquainted with the technology, I took a couple of the tests, right? The online tests. It was
Yep. Yep.
actually really fun. Like I never thought
Thanks.
like that, I wasn't really applying for a job, but like sort of that mimicking that
Right.
process though, like I've never had
Yep.
fun applying for a job before. And we didn't even
Well,
really
thanks.
talk about that, but it was fun. So
Yep.
Frida, this was
Thanks.
super
And I think just
interesting.
one last what
Go
sorry,
ahead.
one last no thing to note, Steve, is that I think when you take a fit approach, and we're not the only ones that take a fit approach, there are other vendors like CAP takes a fit approach. There are other vendors that do this, and I really want to emphasize this. The process of applying to a job go you know go, as opposed to an absolute approach, you know, the process of applying to a job goes from like one of just like, if I don't pass this test, I'm basically locked out of every opportunity, to if I don't pass this test for this algorithm for this company, I can still have lots of other opportunities elsewhere. And we actually do that. We rematch or recycle candidates from one company to another once they've been rejected. And it's a total game changer, I think, for candidates because they don't feel like this test is going to lock me out of opportunity. They're like, oh, this test is a little bit like a sorting hat. If I don't match here, I might match somewhere else. So I really think I would encourage people as much as possible to take this fit approach because not only will it make the system way more efficient for both candidates and companies, it actually is just more realistic to life in general. Like there is no such thing as like the perfect employee. So
Yeah,
I'll
exactly.
stop. I'll get off my soapbox.
No, that's a great point because like I don't know if person one breaks up with you because you're not a match, you don't stop dating forever,
Exactly.
right?
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. And
Well,
nobody
most of us
thinks that,
don't.
you know, that's a great analogy because nobody thinks there's like the perfect romantic partner, or at least I don't think there is. But people do think that there's a perfect employee. And the two things are so similar in the sense of like it's all about fit that it's my mission, at least for the next year, to just kind of really pound on this idea that there is no such perfect employee. So,
Frida, this was so much fun. So a couple of real things real quick. So
yeah,
Frida
thank
Polly,
you.
CEO of Pymetrics. The website is www.pymetrics.com. That's pymetrics.com. We'll link to that in the show notes. We'll link to the open source, the audit AI stuff that you guys are doing at
Thank
Pymetric as
you.
well. And Frida, I mentioned this quickly. I'll mention it again. Frida will be a part of the HR Technology Conference, sitting on one of our really important panels with my friend Chris Dunn and a couple of other really cool folks, all about these issues, about how do we make hiring better after decades of trying? Like, how do we make it better? So if you come to HR Tech and come to that session, you'll hear some of this stuff, but plenty more as well. So Frida, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for taking some time to join us on the HR
Likewise,
Happy
Steve.
Hour show today. All right. Thank you much.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So that's it from the HR Happy Hour show. I want to thank, of course, our sponsor, Virgin Pulse, www.virginpulse.com, and remind you to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a great, fun conversation. Thanks so much for listening. My name's Steve Bowes. We will see you next time. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.